is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. Now, should farmers be sitting up and paying attention to all of this submarine news? Today, you'll hear from Professor Greg Barton, who feels today's defence announcement between the US, UK and Australia could actually have some trade ramifications.
Yeah, I can understand the Australian farmers should be concerned. There will be a lot of bluff and bluster. It'll play out in things like international students and trade, and that's a concern.
Also today, you'll get to meet the brand new president of the Northern Cowboys Association. And before 1:30, we visit a territory cattle station which sadly has lost a number of its horses this year, which have died from eating a native toxic plant.
Oh, it was heartbreaking, really, to see our horses, you know, the condition that they were in. It was hard. You know, we just assumed, oh, well, it's rained before and they haven't eaten it, so why would they eat it now?
Yeah, plenty coming up on today's Country Hour. Hope you can stick around. We are broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. And a reminder, if you need to duck out or if you're about to lose reception there on the highway, you can always download our podcast and listen at a time that suits you. We kick off today's program with some big cotton news for Northern Australia. As the territory gets ready to start building its first commercial cotton gin near Katherine, just across the border in the Kimberley's Ord Irrigation Scheme, farmers there have received a $32 million loan from the NAIF to go and build their own cotton gin. Kimberley Cotton Company Director David Cross says it's an exciting time for the region.
Yeah, there's certainly been a big body of work going to working together with NAIF over the last 12 to 18 months. And we're really fortunate that we've had great support from NAIF. And we're excited to be adding a number of other local farmers and industry stakeholders to the KCC company as well.
This NAIF loan, I mean, how significant is it for the project in terms of its progress going forward?
Certainly, reaching funding approval was a significant milestone in the process. We're not quite there yet. We've still got some work to do, but certainly a key part of the cotton gin project is surety, clarity around supply of cotton in order to justify the capital investment. A key part of that throughput through the gin is having additional farmland come online and come online in the short term. For those that have been in the Ord for a while now, certainly if we look back to the sugar industry, where there was insufficient throughput to justify the capital investment in the sugar mill and the ongoing operation of it, it's really important that we heed the lessons of the past there and make sure that we've got sufficient cotton to go through the facility in order to justify the capex. So there's still a few hurdles that need to be overcome in order to get to that point. KCC's doesn't have a fixed timeline, but yeah, our position very strongly is to move forward as quickly as possible.
Your gin, the first stage, the aim is to get to a stage where it could potentially have the capacity to process 120,000 bales. A gin of this capacity and size, how long typically, looking at your peers in the east, does it take for a construction like that?
We expect the construction phase to take somewhere between 18 and 24 months. The first stage of the facility will have the capacity to process up to 150,000 bales per season, per annum. But we're also conscious of allowing for future growth within the facility. So we'll essentially build the footprint, build the shell of the facility in the first stage to allow for that future growth as well.
And I'm sure that confidence that the gin has begun construction, the hope is that more growers in the valley will now be able to make that sort of commitment to the crop.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen a really strong show of support from all growers in the valley towards cotton and towards the gin, and certainly as the project nears completion or commencement, if you like, I think we'll see that only strengthen. And yeah. We've come off the back of 5 years of significant detailed research and development as well as commercial production. So growers have had the benefit of that time to understand how to grow the crop, to tool up for it, and also give them confidence in the crop as a large scale commercial industry for the orde going forward.
Obviously, at the moment, all of the crop that's coming off the orde is heading about 3,000 k's to Queensland. Just how much is this cotton gin going to be a game changer for the industry here?
Certainly, if we want to expand the area of production, then having the only way to achieve that is to have a local processing facility.
And this season, be the biggest crop in the valley really since its previous incarnation back a few decades ago. I guess you've watched it slowly grow over the last 5 years. As you say, you've been looking for that base crop since sugar has had its collapse. How satisfying must that be to watch that?
Yeah, really, really exciting to watch it grow from, you know, small-scale plot trials out to, you know, approximately 1,500 hectares of commercial production this year. And that whole five-year process has validated that cotton works here. Cotton doesn't come in and displace crops that are already grown in the valley. It complements. So we know that in our conditions, in our region, we must have diversity in the field. We must have crop rotation, and growers are certainly well aware of that. And that's a key part of the planning for how cotton integrates into the bigger system going forward. It's not without its challenges, just like any agricultural operation. But growers are gradually, steadily building that confidence in their ability to deliver on this.
That is David Cross, who is the director of the Kimberley Cotton Company, speaking to Courtney Fowler. So the NAIF, the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility, has handed over a loan for $32 million to go towards building this cotton gin in Kununurra. The WA government's also chipped in about $4 million for this project. Northern Territory cotton growers probably wondering what they've done wrong. They haven't received a dime. Anyway, upon completion of the first stage of this gin over in Kununurra, it will apparently have the capacity to process 15,000 hectares of crop or 120,000 bales every year. And that's expected to be worth around $268 million in gross value to that region. On Twitter, David Connolly, who is the chair of the WANT Cotton Consortium, he says congratulations to the management team of Kimberley Cotton Company in knocking over another step in the road to building a gin. He says interesting to see the difference in the positive community view in Kununurra versus the loud minority view in the Northern Territory. Sustainable cropping and development will bring prosperity to regions, says David Connolly on Twitter.
Yeah, hello, I'm Bruce White from Mount Kepler Station. I've got a few cattle, dabble a bit in rice, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
On ABC Local Radio, across the territory.
It is 22 to 1. Have you heard about the submarines? Making international news today after a new defence partnership was announced between the US, UK and Australia. Now, according to Professor Greg Barton, who is a security expert at Deakin University, he thinks farmers should be paying attention to all of this because he feels that the defence deal could have some ramifications for trade. He says while politicians are reluctant to talk about China in all of this, for him, he feels it's obvious that this defence deal is all about China.
It is about China, and specifically about China under Xi Jinping these last 9 years. He says he wants to stay on indefinitely, so we have to factor that in. He's talked, nevertheless, about unifying mainland China and Taiwan, as he puts it, before he leaves office. So that's a worrying footnote. And, of course, it's the expansion of Chinese naval bases into artificial islands in the South China Sea and then claiming the South China Sea as historical Chinese territory that's really upped things. And in a sense, that happened while we were napping. You know, Biden's emphasis on getting out of Afghanistan is partly a recognition that the 20-year war on terror has seen us not paying as much attention to China expansion as we should. So there is a certain sort of logic with this catching up. It's not surprising when you look back in hindsight, but the news overnight, of course, was surprising.
So how do you think China will react to today's news? I mean, the trade partnership that we have them with them has been put under such enormous pressure. There are people listening in from agricultural communities that are suffering still today because of bans or tariffs on products that we would normally sell to China. Are they likely to react with an economic hammer quickly?
They are likely to react quickly, and it could well cost us, so we should be anxious about that. I mean, so far, most of those trade reactions have been in areas where China can afford to go hard. They've stayed away from the things that they most need. So there's that calculation. But, you know, I can understand Australian farmers, West Australian farmers should be concerned. There will be a lot of bluff and bluster. It'll play out in things like international students and trade. And that's a concern. But we need to sort of separate out the public sort of facing as much for Chinese domestic consumption and international of sort of nationalist strong rhetoric from behind the scenes quiet understanding. And there's still the hope that this will settle the relationship down and put it on a sort of more rational footing. It's key now to try and really invest in the relationship and work all the harder the diplomatic side, because this is going to draw out that sort of nationalist rhetoric, and some of it's going to spray our way in terms of impacting on the trade relationship. But I don't think that can be avoided.
I encourage the diplomacy at all times, and I'm not trying to be fear-mongering, but if you're in Western Australia and you're an iron ore producer, or perhaps you're in Queensland and you ship out coking coal, maybe gas even out of the northwest here in Western Australia that go to steelmaking. China has been holding a steelmaking steady and then slowing it down and then quickening it up. And really all of those little moves sort of, if they sneeze, we catch the cold, I think. So for those that are involved in China's steelmaking, like for the iron ore producers in WA, will they be nervous this morning?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be nervous, but I think the thing to watch is domestic consumption in China. The reason that China hasn't backed away from our steel and coking coal, et cetera, is because they need it. But the extent to which they need it is driven by the Chinese domestic economy. With downturn in their construction markets, a sense of a housing bubble, overbuilding, oversupply, that's the big driver for what China does. And that is a reminder, by the way, that to the extent we can all avoid open military confrontation, which is destructive and wasteful and causes uncertainty and is, to say the least, bad for the economy, then there's more hope that the Chinese economy can remain stable and that their domestic demand will remain strong and they'll buy our stuff. But it really comes down to that. So you can separate out the rhetoric of politics, which is playing to a domestic audience in China, particularly in terms of nationalist speak, from the reality of they'll buy what they need depending on how strongly or slowly their economy is growing.
That is Professor Greg Barton, a security expert and chair in Islamic politics at Deakin University, speaking there to Russell Wolfe. Keep an eye on trade with China, the message there. It is 17:01 on the Country Hour. Up next, we're heading into a paddock near Katherine to talk about high-density plantings. Now, when it comes to things like jackfruit, when it comes to things like mangoes, will the plantations of the future look a lot different to what we see now? That conversation's next, after a bit of old wagon wheel. Right across the territory on the ABC, you are tuned into the Country Hour. Good to have you here. Now, a new project by the CRC for developing Northern Australia will look at high-density plantings of jackfruit and how they might improve yields and help deal with more extreme weather events in the future. This is a continuation of work that also includes putting mangoes on trellises in high-density plantings. Paul Burke from the NT Farmers Association, he made this announcement this morning at the Berrima Export Yards.
So we've done some intensive mango trials already in Katherine, and we're now branching that out to look at, well, how do we make our industry more resilient? So as soon as we have a large natural disaster, and we are prone to them in North Australia, we lose valuable trees and we use valuable production. So how do we actually create some resilience in that process? And I guess the other component of that is, if we're going to grow trees in higher density, how do we actually create some efficiencies in those workforces? And workforce has been a massive issue that's sort of come to bear through COVID, and we've really struggled for staff. So by looking at more dense cropping, We should be able to make some efficiencies in that process, as well as protect ourselves into the future against natural disasters.
Paul Burke from NT Farmers. Now, one of the Territory's biggest mango producers is taking part in this trial, Mambaloo Mangoes. It put around 60 jackfruit trees in the ground last year and is now looking to expand. It's about to plant 400 jackfruit trees in a range of densities, including on trellises. Jackfruit on trellises. Get your head around that one. Max Rowley went out to Mambaloo's farm near Catherine this morning to check things out and had a chat with Managing Director Marie Piccone.
The appeal is that there's a an emerging demand because, you know, Australians have come from all over the world and there are a number of people now in Australia who traditionally eat jackfruit. There's also a lot of people who are moving towards some plant-based meals and jackfruit fits as a protein-based fruit that has got wide appeal. There's demand and there's a lot of canned jackfruit around, but our focus is on fresh Australian premium quality.
And so with that, you've been trialling some jackfruit in the Territory and some other locations. Tell us about the trials.
Yeah, we're doing a trial with CRCNA, the Queensland Department of Primary Industries, and the Northern Territory Department of Agriculture. And we're having a look at jackfruit at three different locations, Matilba in the Atherton Tableland, at Townsville, and here near Catherine in the Northern Territory. We want to have a look at the resilience of the trees when they're trellised versus when they're actually just planted without any trellising support. And we also just want to understand how they grow in each location and which varieties suit various climates and regions.
I'm Trevor Nelson. I'm manager for Mambaloo Ballingilly.
And take me through the different trials that you've got here then. How many trees are you planting?
We're planting all up. There'll be around 400 in this section, which we've done a trial with 60. There is six different varieties that we were doing.
And how have the trials been going to date?
Yeah, not bad. We started off with 60 for the first part of our trial. Wallabies, they really like the taste of them. We did have a bad 2 years of dry, so as soon as they seen some grain, they just come in and ate them. We did try electric fence in it. They just went straight through it. So I put pods around them, which we've saved a lot of them. And then we had the wet come in, which bought a lot of the grasshoppers, which then we found out that grasshoppers also like jackfruit. So once we've got on top of them, now, yeah, they're starting to look really good, really healthy.
And those first ones you put in the last, a year ago, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So about a year ago now, and some of the ones that had been chewed off at the ground by the wallabies, they are starting to grow back as well.
And, well, you've gone a year, you've had these problems with different pests and the like, but you're persisting. You must see a bit of potential in jackfruit.
Yeah, there's definitely potential in the jackfruit, and you can definitely see a big future in it. So I think with what we've learnt by the damage from the wallabies and the grasshoppers will definitely help us in the future.
So this is, to our knowledge, the first time commercial production or trial planting of jackfruit's been attempted near Catherine. And so we're trying to understand which varieties are more suited to the low humidity conditions that we often experience at Catherine and the very large wet seasons, contrasting with long periods of dry. We're trying to understand how to grow them best, what are their nutritional needs, how should we tree train them, and we're looking at, you know, trellising to see what that does to yield. We're looking at close density, high density plantings versus more medium density plantings. Just getting an understanding of how to prune and manage the canopy for best productivity and for tree size control. Where, as Trevor just mentioned, we're trying to understand what the pest complex is and how we would best manage that with, you know, good environmental consideration, but making sure that we can get a crop.
It's also more extreme weather in the top end. Is that a factor as part of this?
Jackfruit are a tropical fruit, and they come out of, you know, that equatorial zone often, and they've evolved in extreme weather. And while we've got extreme weather here, we think that some of the weather in North Queensland with cyclonic conditions is even more extreme. Sure, we'll get some really strong winds here and some crazy storms, and the trellising may prove that it's the way to go in terms of higher yield per square metre and more dense cropping, but we don't know yet. And we don't know whether we need trellising and the associated investment of it. We'll know a lot more in a couple of years' time.
So it could still be a few years until Territorians see some jackfruit coming from your farms into the supermarkets then?
Well, yeah, there'll definitely be fruit being harvested, we would hope, in the next couple of years. But in any sort of quantity, it could take a while, provided it's a success. You know, it's early days. These are the risks that producers in horticulture take, and we're taking a measured risk because it's a market-driven decision, and we think that there is some real potential here.
That's Marie Bocconi, the Managing Director of Manbaloo. Always great having Marie on the program. Normally it's about talking mangoes, but at the moment, having a serious look at jackfruit. She was speaking there to Max Rowley. And so Manbaloo getting involved with this high-density plantings of jackfruit. This project's also got the backing of the CRC for developing Northern Australia. It's throwing a few resources at this. It's been a big day for the CRC, actually. It's announced a range of things, including a study that is going to look at supply chains for territory agricultural produce. Here's Paul Burke from NT Farmers again to explain what that's all about.
We really need to understand how we can get efficiencies into the supply chain so we can better service our customers. We're really ideally placed to get product into Asia, and we think that by bringing all of the pieces of work together that have been done in a desktop review and then identifying where those gaps are and targeting our investment requirements for the industry directly where they're needed. So this piece of work will actually advise government of where industry wants to go over the next 5 to 10 years. So I think it's a really exciting piece of work. Some of the gaps are, we're an emerging market, so we've never had a cool store logistics chain. We've never had that facility, so we've now got one situated at the airport. So how does that interact into the supply chain? So everything we've done in the past, we haven't had that key piece of infrastructure. From a port point of view, what are the efficiencies in that? So we've got one tugboat operator, for example. So where are those efficiencies for industry to make us more competitive in our key markets in Asia?
What are the key markets? What sort of areas?
So it'll vary from crop to crop. Certainly with the mango industry, there's opportunity through Japan, Korea and China. We've already got melons and pumpkins going into Singapore and being dispatched into the Middle East and other areas. For the live export industry, which is probably our most mature part of the supply chain and been operating a long time, they're operating vessels into Indonesia, Vietnam on a regular basis. So how do we capitalise and how do we learn from all of that knowledge that they've got in a more mature industry and apply it to our emerging industries? And, you know, one of the really good examples would be cotton. So how are we going to export the cotton? Where's that going to go? And what does that do in terms of shipping networks? So, you know, you start talking about 100,000 bales of cotton going out of this port. So where's it going to go, and how are we going to capitalise on that for other products?
Paul Burke from the NT Farmers Association, speaking at a do held at the Berrima Export Yards this morning near Darwin.
This week on Landline, how much should wool growers be levied to fund the Australian Wool Innovation Organisation? Also, Australian farmers' growing love of chickpeas. And meet Max Bergman, a passionate camel farmer and scientist who is also legally blind.
I'm just normal. Well, I've got a disability, yeah, but so what? You know, just suck it up and deal with it.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
Hi, I'm Lee Kunoth from Wait River Beef. You're listening to The Country Hour with Maddie Brand.
And a big shout out to the team at Waite River who are tuning in this afternoon via Channel 25 and have requested an Alan Jackson tune. I'm pretty sure we can make that happen on a Thursday afternoon. Don't you worry about that. We got it ready to go, Dan? Ready for a spin? Now, I'm really excited because in a moment you will get to meet the brand new president of the Northern Cowboys Association, Tara Craigie, on your radio in just a moment. But first, let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there this afternoon. Billy, tell us about some of the rain that's fallen in the last 24 hours.
G'day, Matt. Yeah, so we saw those afternoon storms and some overnight storms from Darwin right down into the Gregory Victoria River District. So top of the list is 20 mils at Bachelor, also 20 mils at Dashwood Crossing down in the VRD. But generally speaking, around the Darwin's rural area from sort of Adelaide River up to Darwin, 10 to 20 millimetres, at least in our gauges.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Adelaide River 19 and Noonamara 11. And then down in that Victoria River district, apart from that Dashwood Crossing rainfall, we're just sort of 1 to 2 millimetres. So Wealden Station 1.5 and Coolabah as well, 1.5 mils.
Saw the most wonderful picture on social media yesterday. Someone there at Noonamara taking a photo of the storm front approaching. It was good wet season looking stuff. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and for some people, probably the first thunder they've heard in quite a while.
Yep, I was in the backyard yesterday, heard the thunder. It's good. I just want a very short build-up and just get stuck into the wet season. That'd be lovely.
That would be lovely, but that's not on the cards.
Okay. What's the opportunity for rain in the next 24 hours in the Northern Territory?
Well, in the north, not much more potential because we're seeing quite a lot of dry air begin to push into the western top end. So, like Darwin's dew point has dropped to 50% or so. It was much higher this time yesterday. So for the rest of today, look, we're just saying there's a slight chance of some showers along that west coast of the top end,
mm-hmm.
And around the sort of Gregory Keep River National Park region.
Yeah, just on the looking at the radar, the border country, you know, cattle stations like Gordon Downs, Argyle Downs. It looks like there's a few clouds out that way this afternoon.
Yeah, if you're probably looking at the Halls Creek radar.
So yeah, I am.
That's the one to look at. So although the dry air is pushing into the top end, the more humid air is actually pushing southwards into central Australia and down that western border. So there is a slight chance of seeing some afternoon showers and storms push over to the NT side, but not a lot of rain in it. Tomorrow, though, trough system pushing into southern parts of the territory, and moisture continuing to build. So we're going to see a patchy cloud band develop, and it's going to have some showers and thunderstorms in it too. So not talking widespread, you know, decent rainfall, but there'll be a bit around. So that sort of Tanami, everywhere sort of west of Tennant Creek and south of Tea Tree, looks scattered falls, 1 to 3 millimetres, but maybe some isolated falls, 5 to 10 with the thunderstorms.
Okay. Anything else you can tell us about the forecast for, you know, Central Australia and the Barkly?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Barkly itself is largely going to miss out on any rain, so it's just going to be hot and dry. But over the weekend, that patchy cloud is going to persist south of the Barkly. So again, not expecting a lot of rain, but just a few millimetres each day. And a cooler change pushing in over the weekend as well. But unfortunately, that cooler change doesn't really push into the Barkly either over the weekend. So remaining hot and dry. That's the forecast through until the end of the weekend. Next week, there is a much stronger high pressure system pushing in, so there will be some cooler air, but still a way off.
Well, I see Avon Downs, for example, is 37 degrees on Monday, dropping down to 30 degrees by Wednesday. So at least that's a bit of relief on the way.
Yeah, that's right. And that even that cool air is going to push into the top end by the middle of next week. So it's quite a decent high coming through. And on that, we are probably going to go into fire weather warnings again next week, potentially as early as Sunday.
Anything else we need to be aware of right now?
Probably just the other thing to say, Matt. So offshore waters, so well offshore from Nhulunbuy, we've got a marine wind warning for 25 to 30 knots for today and tomorrow.
Beauty. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, g'day, it's Jed Fawcett from Adelaide River. During the dry season, I go out and we do a bit of contract buffalo catching, bull catching. When I get a chance, I like to tune into the ABC Country Hour.
It is 10 past one. Let's talk about rodeo, because the Northern Cowboys Association has got a brand new president. Her name is Tara Craigie. I spoke to Tara earlier this morning and firstly got her to explain what the Northern Cowboys Association is all about.
The Northern Cowboys Association has been around in the Northern Territory since 1995, I just recently found out. We're an association that affiliates with rodeos and camp drafts across the Kimberley and the entire Northern Territory. And we have a great membership of competitors and their families from across that area. And we're just made up of a group of passionate rodeo people who are doing our best at the moment to promote the sport of rodeo and other horse events such as camp drafts and gymkhanas.
And so for you, why get involved?
Yeah, sadly, our long-term president, Tony Marie Butt, passed away. She was a fantastic woman to have part of our sport. She, in her time, she focused a lot on the junior rodeos. We now have up to 100 nominations per event. We hold four junior rodeos per year, and that's all thanks to Tony, and it was just really important to me that her legacy was carried on. And not only that, I've been involved with rodeos in the Northern Territory for a few years now, running Mataranka events and also delivering schools out into the communities throughout the Northern Territory with my husband, Jason. And obviously, rodeo's in the family. Jason's been riding ever since he was a little tacker. So, yeah, it's a topic of conversation around the dinner table. It's a part of our lives. And I wanted to see the sport blossom in the Territory. So here we are. We'll see how we go.
Can you paint a picture for us, Tara? When you go to communities with Jason, what do you do?
They're little programs that mainly take place in school holidays. And it's just to engage with the kids and sometimes adults. Adults come along as well. But in the past, we've turned up with horses and cattle, and we focus a lot on what it takes to actually take care of these animals. And also, they do get to ride. There's a safe ride. We provide all the safety equipment and everything for them. So there's a bit of fun involved as well.
They put down the AFL footy and get engaged, do they?
They do, absolutely, especially in some of these remote areas through the Roper River region or Borroloola and Mataranka. Yeah, they love it. It's very exciting. I think they like the adrenaline, to be honest.
Now, you've got a big event coming up pretty soon, in a couple of weeks, yes?
We do. So it's an event over the 24th and the 25th of September. On the 24th, we've got a junior rodeo. And on the 25th, we've got a massive day. We're starting off with the second part of our junior rodeo. We're hosting a free come and try for competitors because we want to open up our event to anybody that might be interested. It's a sport that you can just, it can attract anybody from any walk of life. So you don't necessarily have to be a cowboy to be riding in the rodeo. And then our main event For our senior competitors starts at 4 o'clock on the 25th of September at Robbie Robbins Reserve. And we've just managed to get the 2021 Rugby League Premiers, the Northern Sharks. They have come on board to have a competition against our Northern Cowboys. So they're going to ride bulls. And I believe they had to, I believe they went overtime to win their NRL Premiership. So I wonder if they can go overtime to win a bull ride.
Well, that's right. They've only got to go 8 seconds. Yeah.
Mm. I said that. It's only 8 seconds. And they said, yeah, well, coming from a Cowboy's wife, it's only 8 seconds.
Rightio. So rugby league players versus Cowboys. I know where my money would be going.
It will be interesting.
Is it easy to pass on a quick tip to someone having a crack for the first time?
Hold on tight. I'll have to think about that one.
No, well, it's tough, isn't it? I think there's more than one. So this is all on at the Robbie Robbins Reserve on the 24th and 25th of September. Tara, just before I let you go, on the topic of rodeo, is it okay if I get you to brag about your husband just for a moment? He's been going pretty well, yes?
He has been, and funnily enough, this was the year where he was just going to take it easy. So we thought we would take a little family trip over to Mount Isa and he'd have a crack and see how he went. And he won the buckle. The Mount Isa second division bareback buckle has come home to the Northern Territory, and then he did all right at Noonamar Rodeo a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, so he's kicking goals this year so far.
Got a big enough trophy cabinet?
He does. He does.
Yeah, well, all the best in a couple of weeks, and thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, big thanks to Tara Craigie, the new president of the Northern Cowboys Association.
G'day, how you going? It's Leo Skliros here, president of the Northern Territory Mango Industry Association, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Now, the toxic native plant known as Indigofera, it's been in the headlines this year after it was linked to a series of dog deaths in Victoria. Turns out it's also caused, unfortunately, a number of horse deaths here in the Northern Territory. Up next, you'll hear from a Territory cattle station which has had this experience. They'll share their story, their learnings from this with you in just a moment. But first, a song, and this is a request from the team there at Waite River. Desperate to hear a bit of Alan Jackson on a Thursday afternoon. So I hope Waite River and the rest of the Territory enjoys this one. It's a good time.
Oh, I've been working all week and I'm tired. I don't want to sleep and I want to have fun. It's time for a good time.
A request from Cattle Country. We always love that here at the Country Hour. That's good time. Alan Jackson.
The Eagles have landed on the MCG in 2018.
It's a premiership masterpiece from the Tigers. All in yellow and black. A 12th AFL flag.
The Tigers are still the best team in the land. 3 flags in 4 years for Richmond.
Who's next? The AFL Grand Final on ABC Radio and ABC Sport Digital.
A cattle station in Central Australia says it's sadly lost 6 of its horses this year to poisoning from a toxic native plant known as Indigofera. Now, if you've been tuning into the Country Hour, you'd be aware of this plant. It was linked to the deaths of 24 dogs in Victoria recently after they ate pet food, which included horse meat from the territory that was contaminated with the Indospicine. So out at Waite River Station, which is to the northeast of Alice Springs, the Kunoff family say the loss of their horses has been heartbreaking. Lee Kunoff spoke to Hugo Rickard-Bell about what happened.
We had an old mare that belonged to our youngest son. He was learning to ride on her, and she was just pretty crook. We just didn't know really what it was. And so I rang Ken Oliver first because, you know, he's always the first port of call. He's a bush vet. And he said it could have been a few different things. He kind of mentioned the Indy Gofra, but, you know, we thought, nah, well, we haven't seen any around. So we went to the DPI, Greg Crawford, and got a book with all the species of plants and stuff like that. And Indy Gofra was in the book. And then it come down and read all the symptoms of what horses could have, like, if they had eaten Indy Gofra. So we knew then.
What were her symptoms? What was her behaviour like? Like, what tuned you into the fact that she was crook?
Well, she was losing weight. That was one thing. She was lost. Like, you could see she would start walking in circles or a bit. You know, she wasn't herself. She would usually walk up to you and want to pat, but she just wasn't doing it.
I mean, on a lot of stations, horses are work animals, but they're also, you know, companion animals. How did that feel to sort of see her in that sense?
Oh, it was heartbreaking because, you know, she was a good mare. You could do anything on her. The two kids had learned to ride on her, and Dean, only being 5 or 6 at the time, he, you know, he was started camp drafting on her, so it was his pride and joy.
And how long did it take before, you know, for the poison to take over and for her to pass away?
She started to come back a little bit all right. Like, we thought she was coming all right. She started putting on condition, but then within another week, you had to put her down because she went right downhill and there was nothing you could do for her.
You've got a number of horses on Waite River. How many did you lose?
We lost a good 6 of our horses. Only about 3 or 4 of them were good riding horses. The rest were, like, ones we'd been given or we were going to break in and stuff, but still they're all horses and they're still, you know, but we lost 6 of them.
How does one, you know, sort of deal with that on the ground level?
Oh, it was heartbreaking, really, to see our horses, you know, the condition that they were in. It was hard.
What sort of advice were you given or have you been given, you know, to prevent this happening in the future?
You talk to a lot of people now in the district because it's happened to a lot of people's horses as well. Loosen. People tell you to feed them loosen. Electrolytes and stuff like that if they've got it. And just feed them every now and then with high protein food just so they stay off it because they get addicted to it because it's high protein. Like, yeah.
Is there a concern that, you know, this could happen again or are you pretty confident that you've got the measures in place?
Oh, could happen again. You can't say it's never going to happen again. It could, but I think we'll keep more of an eye out for it now because we didn't know about it. You know, you didn't really think that it would happen to your horses or it was on your property because we did get told that, oh, I don't think it's mainly on, wait, there's not much on that property. So, you know, we just assumed, oh, well, it's rained before and they haven't eaten it, so why would they eat it now?
We've spoken to a vet about this before and they say, you know, it's often a good season that will bring upon, you know, more Indy Gofra on the ground. Is that a telltale for here at Waite?
Yeah, that is. And that's what everyone said as well. Like, good season is what's brought it up. And, you know, we've had all right seasons, but this was a big, good season and that's what's brought it up. And there was a lot of it around.
Have you found it since and walking around, you know, are you noticing it a lot more?
Oh, yeah. Even when you're driving through the station, you can see it. There's, like, massive big patches with purple flowers on it. You can see it now. Because we know what we're looking for. It was probably there before, but now it's bigger and we know what we're looking for. You see it.
That is Leah Kunoff from Waite River Station, which is about 250 k's up the Sandover Highway from Alice Springs, speaking there to Hugo Rickard-Bell. Really appreciate Lee sharing her story and experience there with the Country Hour. Now, if you missed the start of today's program, big cotton news over there in Kununurra in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. Farmers have picked up a $32 million loan from the NAIF to help build cotton gin.
We've seen a really strong show of support from all growers in the valley towards cotton and towards the gin, and certainly as the project nears completion or commencement, if you like, I think we'll see that only strengthen.
Yeah, it was David Cross from the Kimberley Cotton Company speaking to us earlier on about that NAIF loan and all systems go for cotton in the Ord. If you missed that interview, you can catch it in its entirety via our podcast. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday afternoon and keep it rural.